Listen. The snap of a chocolate bar is a sound that fills many of us with joy and anticipation. That's why journalist and author Simran Sethi chose chocolate and some of our other favorites like wine and coffee to tell a story about the loss of biodiversity in all of the foods we enjoy. Her new book, Bread, Wine, Chocolate, is filled with descriptions of smelling and tasting, really savoring the experience of food. But she also provides some important numbers, like this. 95% of the world's calories come from just 30 species. We're basically eating all the same things. I recently spoke with Sethi from a studio in North Carolina and asked, why is this a problem?
If you think about it the way we think about something like an investment portfolio, if we're, you know, advised by someone on how to invest what little money we may have in savings, what they all say is don't put everything in one basket. What we know when we do that, if we say put everything in one stock, let's say, and that stock crashed, you would lose everything. So the exact same thing is happening to food, but it's this greatest, you know, most important story about food and agriculture that isn't really being told. You know, our diet has now collapsed globally into really wheat, rice, corn, soybeans, and palm oil. And we're growing the same types of foods and we're growing the same varieties. And they tend to be the ones that are high yielding and that are disease resistant to whatever capacity they can be. But the problem with doing this is if one of them succumbs to a disease, if one of them succumbs to a pest, then what happens? If we haven't been growing diverse varieties of not only those five foods, but all the foods that we love, then we'll lose them.
I love the scene in the book where you're on the cacao farm. And that's the plant that chocolate comes from. I think it's in Ecuador. And you say of that experience, these were the tastes of biodiversity. Could you describe that scene a little bit and what you meant by that?
I've been eating chocolate my entire life. So it's something I love deeply. But I had never considered where it came from. And then there I was in the center of origin for cacao. So cacao, as you said, becomes chocolate. And I entered into a forest, a very dense forest, and there are these trees and they have these things hanging off of them that look like kind of ridged footballs. And they're absolutely bizarre because they're very, very heavy. And they're on these kind of tiny stems on thick trunks. And you're like, where am I? Like, what is this weird thing hanging off this tree? And you split it open and there's this pulpy white fruits inside. And inside of those fruits are the seeds that will one day become chocolate. And the tastes of biodiversity are right there. And what I mean by that is that within every single one of those cacao pods, those little fruits that come in colors ranging from purple to green to yellow to red, there are myriad tastes of what the fruit tastes like. And when I dug my hands, my very sticky, dirty, insect-repellent, sticky hands into those fruits, which are kind of very moist, very warm, you know, because I'm in a tropical forest, and I dug out these fruits and I popped them in my mouth. My eyes were popping out of my head. I'm not kidding. I was tasting something that tasted a lot like sweet tarts. I was tasting, you know, something lemony. I was tasting something a little bit more approximating a nut, you know, and it was like, what is happening here? All these flavors are in this one pod of cacao. And then you start to think about this and you're like, wow, once these seeds are roasted and turned into something, they have a special taste. And every single region in the world that grows cacao is known for a particular kind of taste, but it starts right there.
You know, we're talking about wine and chocolate, kind of luxury items. We don't really need them, maybe with the exception of bread. But you point out that these foods are not luxury items for the people who produce them. They're their livelihoods. How does more biodiversity in the foods we eat benefit growers and producers?
This is the part of the story that is most compelling to me. We're not only growing fewer varieties of, let's say, apples, but we're growing fewer apples in general, right? I mean, just to use apples as an example, we just eat fewer types of foods. And then within that, within whatever it is we're eating even less kind of diverse varieties. So that's genetic erosion. And that translates down into the loss of biodiversity in our soil, the loss of diversity in the kinds of seeds that we're sowing. For me, as I was hearing about this, what I also realized was through industrialized agriculture, we're losing something that I consider even more precious, what I refer to as cultural erosion. And that is the knowledge that farmers already have. That indigenous wisdom, that traditional knowing, those seeds are what disappear when we start to sow fields full of genetically engineered corn. It becomes a kind of cookie cutter process. And that to me strips away the art of what this is. Somebody is growing our food. Those hands are making what will go into our bodies and nourish us. And those hands are incredibly important to me.
If I read correctly, you sold your house and really changed your life. You traveled, of course, extensively to report these stories. How did the experience of writing the book change you?
I sold my house, I gave away my car, and I started on this journey across 6 continents over 5 years. And I didn't realize at the time, but what it did was it showed me that I was never alone, that every mug of coffee that I drink connects me back to Africa. I mean, a continent I had hardly ever thought of, much less Ethiopia, where coffee was born, that continues to sustain the biodiversity we'll need in the future. And I'm humbled by this. And I look at that cup of coffee as in a different way. I'm alone, but I'm never alone. The whole world is connected to me through my plate. I may have bought those apples at a local farmer's market, but the center of origin for apples is China. You know, I may have bought that wheat, you know, at a local bakery, but that wheat was born in the Middle East, you know, a place that's now going through severe political strife, you know, that we wouldn't have chocolate for the grace of, you know, without the grace of places like Peru and Ecuador. Like, what? I hadn't even thought of these places. I am so grateful for this journey. It has forced me to connect with the world, and it has reminded me of my place in the order of things. It has humbled me to see conservationists at all of these, what we call ex situ conservation sites, so seed banks and different kinds of places where they save different parts of plants if we don't grow them from seed. And they are fighting so hard, and they are operating on such slim budgets. You know, some of these people were like, I don't know if I have a contract next month, as I'm writing them into the book. You know, you work here. Well, let's hope you still officially work there by the time the book comes out. You know, that kind of commitment and those kinds of farmers. None of those farmers are being compensated for saving biodiversity. Like, the people who are doing these things are heroes. You know, I would walk into a shop and I was like, where's the best place to get bread? A woman closed her shop early and took me over to the bakery. You know, that these sacred moments culminated in me eating a meal in Peru and realizing I had a lot of shame around sitting at the table by myself, you know, a table for one. And in that meal, I started crying, which is even more embarrassing. But I realized I was never alone. And that the world was with me, and it was sacred and beautiful and delicious, like beyond measure. But I think that's the biggest awareness that's come from me. I had been so disconnected from my food, and I had been so disconnected from myself. And then here I was, finally returning to myself, returning to that just sweet, sacred 2 minutes with that cup of coffee, you know, just putting that spoon of food in my mouth and really tasting it. And to me, it's changed who I am, and it's changed the way I see the world. And I'm so grateful. I write in the book, this is a book about food, but it's really a book about love. And I mean it.
Simran Sethi is the author of Bread, Wine, Chocolate, The Slow Loss of Foods We Love. Sethi includes a tasting guide within each chapter because she says by learning how to appreciate and invest in a greater diversity of foods, people can help slow the loss of our favorites. And if you like chocolate as much as I do, check out our website. There's an excerpt from the chocolate chapter there. That's AlleghenyFront.org. This is the Allegheny Front. I'm Carol Holzapfel.